Hello friends, welcome to VSchool once again. We are on chapter 6. Very important chapter, because in the previous chapter we saw the basic concepts on mergers, acquisitions, takeovers, reverse mergers. We also saw the difference between mergers and acquisition. And now we are perfectly set to understand the basis of mergers and acquisition, and also how these mergers and acquisitions are evaluated. In this chapter, you will learn about the process involved in the mergers and acquisitions, the basis for mergers and acquisitions, the techniques of evaluation of mergers and acquisitions proposal, and the POTUS 5 forces model, which is very important to understand how the basis for mergers and acquisition works about. So let's begin. In this chapter, you will learn about the BCG matrix, the GE matrix, the SWOT analysis, strengths of mergers and acquisitions, weaknesses of mergers and acquisitions, opportunities for mergers and acquisitions, threats of mergers and acquisitions, and the POTUS 5 forces model. So in this chapter, you are going to understand so many techniques for evaluating mergers, acquisitions, as well as the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats of mergers and acquisition, along with the POTUS 5 forces model. So let's begin with the BCG matrix. Bruce Henderson of the Boston Consulting Group developed in 1970 a portfolio planning model and call it the BCG matrix. Why was this done? To help the companies analyze their business units or the product lines. It also helps the company allocate their resource and is used as an analytical tool in brand marketing, product management, strategic management, and portfolio analysis. In this BCG matrix, a company's units are classified into four categories. A company's units are classified into four categories based on the combination of market groups and the market share relative to the largest competitor. The matrix aims to map the business unit's position within these two important profitability determinants. And when the market growth and the market share are divided into two parts, a 2x2 matrix emerges. The cells are used to classify the business into four categories, that is the cash cows, the dogs, the question marks, and the stars. So these four categories are put into a 2x2 matrix. The natural cycle for the most business units is that they start as a question mark. Then they eventually turn into the stars. Then eventually, when the market stops growing, the business unit becomes a cash cow, and at the end of the cycle, the cash cow turns into a dog. So this is the phase into which a question mark transitions into a star, into a cash cow, and finally into a dog. Now let us understand each of these four categories, starting with the cash cows. The cash cows are the units with the high market share in a slow growing industry. Generates cash in excess of the amount of cash needed to maintain the business. They are to be milked continuously with as little investment as possible, since such investment would be wasted in industry with low growth. The returns of cash cows are often used to support other divisions. Every corporation would be thrilled to own its cash cows, and as many cash cows, the more the milking that could happen. The next category is the dogs. Dogs, or more charitably called pets, are units with low market share in the mature, slow-growing industry. These units typically break even, generating barely enough cash to maintain the business market share. It provides the social benefit of providing jobs and possible synergies that assist the other business units. Acquirers should avoid acquiring such companies, as they would not add value and would result in increased losses and turn out to be bad buy decision. If Such a unity is old. It is better to divest it as early as possible. Next category is the question mark. Question mark, also known as the problem child, are growing rapidly and thus consume large amount of cash. They have a low market share and they do not generate much cash. A question mark has the potential to gain the market share and become a star and eventually a cash cow when the market growth slows. If the question mark does not succeed in becoming the market leader, then after perhaps years of cash consumption, it will degenerate into a dog when the market growth declines. Question mark must be analyzed carefully in order to determine whether they are worth the investment required to grow the market share. If the entity generates cash and has the potential to become a cash cow, it should be invested in. If it is unable to generate cash, then it should be divested. The next category is the stars. Stars are unit with a high market share in a fast-growing industry. The hope is that the stars become the next cash cows. Sustaining the business unit's market leadership may require an extra cash. When the growth slows, the star becomes the cash cows. An acquirer should try and identify such divisions and acquire them. If it already owns such a division, then the strategy should be to invest it in aggressively for further growth. Now, the overall goal of the BCG matrix. The overall goal of the BCG matrix ranking was to help the corporate analysts and acquirers decide which of their business units to fund and how much and which units to be sold. They were supposed to gain perspective from the analysis of this with the help of these metrics that allowed them to plan and confidence to use money generated by the cash cows to fund the stars and possibly the question marks. Now, what does a balanced portfolio say? The balanced portfolio, according to this theory, only diversified company with a balanced portfolio can use its strengths to truly capitalize on its growth opportunities. Balanced portfolio has the stars whose high share and high growth assure the future, the cash cows that supply funds for that future growth, and the question marks to be converted into stars with the added funds. Now let us look at the G matrix. G matrix was developed by General Electric. The G matrix was developed because it was argued that the BCG matrix is narrow in its approach and exceedingly simple. It is a portfolio management technique that focuses on the industry attractiveness and competitive position. These two are divided into three categories, making it a 3x3 matrix. So if the BCG matrix was 2x2 matrix, the G matrix is 3x3 matrix. The cells are then used to classify the business units into winners, losers, question marks, average business, and the profit producers. The x-axis, the horizontal, shows the growth rate, and the y-axis, the competitive position on the vertical side. So basically, this is how you can actually understand this graphical diagram. On one side, you have the market attractiveness. On the other side, you have the business position strength. You have a clear point in yellow, which is for invest for growth. You also have some more yellows, invest selectively for growth, invest the organization selective in choice for product. Look at the diagonal in green. It all indicates protect, develop selectively, building upon strengths. You have one pink in the harvest, you have one blue in the divest, and you have harvest or divest. So you can take different decisions based on what the BCG, this G matrix tells about when you compare it with the market attractiveness and the business position. The factors that determine the overall attractiveness of the industries are the market growth, the market size, the competitive intensity, and the capital requirements. When these are assessed collectively, it implies that greater the market and larger the market, the lesser is the capital requirements and the lesser the competitive intensity, making the industry more attractive. The other determinants of an organization's competitive position industry are the market share, the technological know-how, the product quality, the service network, the price competitiveness, and the operations cost. Favorable market competitive position, or favorable competitive position in the market, a business with large market share, better technological know-how, high product quality, quality service network, competitive prices, low operating costs, is in a favorable competitive position in the market. What does the G matrix state? The G matrix submits that an entity should invest in the winners. It should maintain the market position of average business and profit producers, where industry attractiveness and competitive position is average, and should sell the losers if it owns any. The acquirer can analyze the growth prospects of the firm's business and plan the resource deployment strategy of the entity with the objective of maximizing the performance. The G matrix also submits that can be used to ascertain the divisions that are creating value and the ones that are destroying value, so that the entity can divest from the divisions destroying value and acquire divisions that would add the value. Now we look at another analytical tool which we call as a SWOT analysis. Often mergers and acquisitions turn sour and do not achieve the benefits that are anticipated, and hence, before the first steps towards the mergers and acquisitions are taken, it is important that an analysis be done to support a merger or acquisition. A SWOT analysis is very useful in understanding whether the merger or acquisition would be in the company's best interest. When we talk in terms of SWOT, S stands for the strengths, W for the weaknesses, O for the opportunities, and T for the threats. Let us look at this one by one. The strengths of mergers and acquisitions. Number one, increased market share. A merger or an acquisition may enable a company to enter a market that it did not have a significant presence in, or any presence at all. For example, ICICI Bank got a big foothold in South India by its acquisition of the Bank of Madura. The second important point in the strengths, access to better technology. The target company would get access to better technology, and on being merged, the acquiring company will benefit from this. When Sony and Ericsson combined, both of them benefited, as they both had the technological expertise. The third important strength, increased profits. Entering into the markets and expanding the product range and customer base results in the increased profits and the economies of scale. For example, the merger of Reliance Petroleum with Reliance Industries resulted in the cost saving from economies of scale, leading to increased profits. The fourth important strength point would be acquisition of stock at a minimal price. It is believed that mergers occur when the market value or the target company share does not reflect its true market value. This gives the acquiring company the chance to acquire the target company at a relatively cheaper price by buying its shares. The fifth important strength, reduction in debt. By restructuring or merging, the company's intangible assets and accumulated losses are written off, making the balance sheet look stronger. It could also bring in cash to the company, either through the issue of shares or through the sale of assets. The cash generated could be utilized to reduce the debt. The sixth important strength point, opportunity to acquire end-to-end solutions. Often the mergers occur because there are the synergetic benefits. These often increase the productivity, reduces the cost, improves the efficiency levels, and provides the end-to-end solutions regarding the technological, financial re-engineering, and the human resources. The seventh strength point is the competitive advantage. Mergers often occur as it has the potential to help the companies involved multiply the strengths using their core competencies. After merging, the technological advantage could be used to develop new products. The distribution network could be used to ensure that customers get better products more quickly. So lots of competitive advantage could be achieved with a merger. Now, having seen about the strengths, let's look at the weaknesses of mergers and acquisition. There could be weakness too that might occur in a merger or acquisition. Number one weakness, the style of management. If the style of management is autocratic and highly centralized, the growth may be stifled. The second point of weakness, aggressive trade unionism. Often the trade unions, in their quest to protect the interests of the employees, may harm the merged entities by not permitting technological improvements, growth plans, and other initiatives. The third important weakness point could be the monopoly creation. The criticism most often leveled at mergers and acquisitions is the creation of monopolies. Consumers often feel exploited as they are forced to pay higher prices, and sometimes the quality may even suffer. The fourth weakness, integration difficulties. The culture of two entities may be diametrically different, and as a consequence of which, the integration may be difficult. For example, when ICICI Bank merged with Bank of Madura, there was a considerable integration problem as their culture was very, very different. The fifth important weakness point, absence of skilled manpower. The mergers require not only realigning the work culture, but also skilled manpower to carry out the plans effectively. If the skilled manpower is not available, the process of merger becomes difficult. The sixth important weakness could be the increased cost. When entities are merging, there could be a situation where two persons doing the same job would continue to do it. There would be two sales managers, two human resources managers, two head offices, and the like. The problem becomes bigger when the two functional heads of the same function do not work together. This increases the cost and also affects the productivity. Now let's look at the opportunities for the mergers and acquisitions. Opportunities are those conditions that are favorable and help a company attain its objectives. If the merging entities can identify their opportunities, they can use this to achieve their targets. This includes growth in the market share, expansion, ability to raise money, and the likes. So once you can identify the opportunities, then you can find some good purpose to buy it. Opportunities for mergers and acquisitions can be in the form of expansion opportunities, better ability to raise capital, self-reliance, tax concessions, demographic shifts. So this all can account for solid growth in the business. Now let us look at this one by one, the expansion opportunities. By merging, the entities can enter markets that were earlier the domain of entity that have merged with. To enter these markets, they do not have to spend time and money developing the markets and making the market aware of their products and themselves. They can piggyback on the success and presence of a partner. So this expansion opportunity can be a big thing for the acquiring company. Better ability to raise capital. Mergers and restructuring help companies to revamp their balance sheets to make them look healthy. This is done by selling the ideal assets and writing off intangible assets such as the goodwill. The funds generated by selling ideal assets can be used to reduce the debt. A healthy balance sheet also makes it easier to raise the loans from the banks. So better funds management, better ability to raise capital can be a good opportunity with mergers and restructuring. Next important benefit could be in the form of self-reliance. The synergies that occur as a result of merger and acquisition makes a company self-reliant. For example, if a motor car company has bought a tire company, it becomes self-reliant regarding the tires. In short, dependence on outside vendors reduces, and this helps the company to plan its production and execute its plan more effectively. This can also be viewed as an opportunity to expand the business. Next important benefit in the form of tax concessions. Companies or mergers or reconstruction often take over the accumulated losses of the other entity, and these losses can be used to reduce their own profits and in turn the tax liability. The next important benefit is the demographic shift. When companies enter the new markets, they get the advantage of getting control over the new market. And that could have a very different demographic structure. This can be exploited by the company to introduce new products, expand the product portfolio. The new market would also provide opportunities for introducing new technologically advanced products and entering the new market segments. So when there is a demographic shift, you can build your portfolio, and based on that, you can market it to the diverse segments of the consumers. Finally, the threats of merger and acquisition. Threats are external conditions that could damage a company and create the hurdles in the way of pursuing and attaining the planned objectives. Threats can have an adverse impact on the merging entities, since the structure, the product range, the culture, and the market size of the entity changes. And hence, threats have to be managed, otherwise the company would have to suffer. Now, the common threats that are faced during mergers and acquisitions are unfriendly legal framework, takeover threats, changes in technology, and changes in taste and preferences. Let us look at this one by one. First, the unfriendly legal framework. The legal framework in many countries is not favorable to mergers and acquisitions. There are several laws that cause the restrictions. It results in delays and difficulties. This can deprive the company of the opportunity to exploit the prevailing favorable conditions. Second important threat, takeover threat. Companies merge and acquire companies to become larger, more efficient, and make greater profits. When they achieve this, they become the targets of the companies to take over. So this could be another threat that is likely in a merger and acquisition. The third threat could be in the form of changes in technology. A company that merges or restructures and acquires the latest technology also faces a threat in terms of changing technology. As the technology becomes outdated and obsolete, the entity has to invest more in the new technology. Next important threat could be in changes in the taste and preferences. The changing customer taste and the preferences could impact the growth of the business. An entity may invest heavily in technology. A change in preference may make the technology redundant, resulting in huge losses to the company. So friends, this is the SWOT we did, and this SWOT can be used for analyzing a company. Now we move on to the Porter's Five Forces model. The Porter's Five Forces model theory is based on the submission that a business strategy of an entity to a large extent is determined by the nature of competition prevailing in the industry. The degree and intensity of the competition in the industry determines the profit potential of an entity. If the intensity of competition is high, the companies tend to spend heavily on activities that deal with competition, such as the advertisement and price wars. The Porter's model is based on the logic that a corporate strategy should be able to counter the opportunities and threats prevailing the organization's external environment. When you talk in terms of Porter's 5-4 competitive forces, Porter identifies 5 competitive forces that he believes shape every industry and every market. And the 5 competitive forces are: number 1, the threat of new entrants; number 2, the power of suppliers; number 3, the power of buyers; number 4, the threat of substitute products; number 5, the threat of rivalry amongst other firms. These forces not only determine the intensity of competition, but also influence the profitability and attractiveness of an industry. Now let us look at what points are included in the threat of new entrants. It can be barriers to entry, it can be economies of scale, it can be product differentiation, it can be capital requirements, it can be switching costs to buyers, it can be access to distribution channels, it can be other cost advantages, it can be government policies, it could be income density, defense of market share, it could be industry growth. So any of these parameters can cause threat for new entrants, and the new entrants will have to see how he can overcome these threats, which are specifically meant for new entrants. what do you mean by the determinants of supplier's power? Supplier's power can be on account of supplier's concentration, availability of substitute inputs, the importance of supplier's inputs to the buyers, supplier's product differentiation, importance of industry to suppliers, buyer switching costs to other input, the supplier's threat of forward integration, buyer's threat of backward integration. So how the supplier wields the power, that will decide the competitive advantage. Then just like supplier have a power, the buyer also have a power. So what are the determinants of buyer's power? The number of buyers related to the several sellers, the product differentiation, the switching cost to use the product, the buyer's profit margins, the buyer's use of multiple sources, buyer's threat of backward integration, the seller's threat of forward integration, importance of product to the buyer, as well as the buyer's volumes. So these are the determinants for the buyer's power. Then what are the determinants of the substitute products, threats of substitute products, the relative price of the substitute, the relative quality of the substitute, and the switching cost to buyers? This can be the determinants for the threats of substitute products. Then rivalry amongst existing firms is also very important. This rivalry amongst existing firms could, the determinants could be the number of competitors, the relative size of competitors, the industry growth, the fixed cost versus variable cost, the product differentiation, the capacity augmented in large increments, the buyer switching cost, the diversity of competitors, the exit barriers, as well as the strategic stakes. Now let us look at the horizontal and vertical competition. Of the Porter's five competitive forces, three constitutes the horizontal competition, whereas the other two forces constitute the vertical competition. Now, what are the components of the horizontal competition? Number one, threat of substitution products. Number two, threat of established rivals. And number three is threat of new entrants. The vertical competition components include the bargaining power of the suppliers and the bargaining power of the buyers. So this is how these five components are further categorized into horizontal and vertical competition. Now, how do we apply the Porter's five forces model? Porter believes that the model should be used at the industry level and not at the industry group or the industry sector level. So specifically to be used at the industry level. Firms that compete in a single industry should try and develop one of the five forces for themselves. The fundamental issue for a diversified company is selection of the industries in which the companies should compete. Now, this becomes a critical issue while targeting mergers and diversifications. A thorough analysis of these elements must be done before a company goes ahead with its plan to merge or to acquire. So friends, with this, we reach the conclusion of this chapter. In this chapter, we have learned about the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats of mergers and acquisitions. We saw about the Boston Consulting Group metrics. We saw the GE metric. We also saw the individual components of the SWOT analysis. We have also learned various techniques of evaluation and mergers and acquisition proposal and the Porter's five forces model. So this should form a very strong basis for mergers and acquisition, and you could actually use this techniques for evaluating the mergers and acquisitions proposal. Thank you.